You're listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. In today's episode, the podcast will take a break from our normal interview format, instead presenting a palate cleanser, where UCB teachers and staff present official UCB news and updates, focus on a specific element of long-form improv, and offer experimental, one-off episodes. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking, and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast. From New York, I am Kelsey Bailey, and I am joined here with Lou Gonzalez.
Hi.
Brian Foss.
Hey.
And Tony Rodriguez.
Hi.
And this is a special episode of the Longform podcast. We're actually reporting live from the DCM Party Space Podcast Lounge. We're reporting live.
Good, because I went to journalism school, so this is serious.
Okay, great. I would love to see what you bring. Today we're going to be talking about how to be a better ally on stage. We are all queer identifying improvisers, and with it being Pride Month, Pride Weekend in New York, the biggest gay event in New York City, and DCM, the biggest improv event of all time.
I mean, I would argue that Halloween is gayer than Pride in New York City.
Okay.
And he loves his costumes.
That's true.
He loves his costumes, and yeah. I can't disagree.
Really?
I don't go because I think that I would be too overwhelmed by a Halloween parade.
No, what's great about it is it's always on Halloween, so it's like it could be a Tuesday, and you see people like
dressed to the nines,
wearing costumes to work.
Just so that I'm clear, you're telling me the Halloween parade is gayer than the gay pride parade, right? Yeah.
It's that's
whether they know it or not.
Everyone. It's like inclusive gay. Like straight people can be anything they want, right? And you can just...
It feels a little bit like that. I do like that about it. Mm-hmm. But I think Pride has now changed where people will, within just a few years, I think straight allies will change their Facebook profile pic to say love wins or to put like a rainbow heart. And it's confusing as a gay person. Yeah. I'm like, is this person gay now? What happened?
Yeah. Right.
But I think it's like in a few years, it's just like everyone's gay, right?
Right. Everyone's somewhere on the spectrum of it.
Right. Or just supportive of, you know, human rights.
Yeah. I took the subway here because the Pride Parade is happening as we record, or at least is about to. And there was a gaggle of girls who got on, like, decked out in rainbow regalia. And I was, like, 100% certain they're all just straight girls, but they're out there.
I might cry. Wow. I walked up the Pride Parade on my way here, and everyone like marching or on a motorcycle or everything, everyone was cheering so big. And then like I made eye contact with this woman who was just like hands in the air, like cheering, and we just like smiled at each other. It was like,
that's very
great.
Nice.
And we're here to talk about improv.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Enough, right.
Honestly, enough about the Pride Parade. We're here to talk about improv. Guys, I have a question for you to get this conversation going. What should cis straight improvisers be most aware or consider of when navigating identity on stage? So what are things that cis straight improvisers could be doing better?
My first reaction to this question is like the same things you would do with any good improv, which is pay attention to the names of a character, not making a gender or a relationship in unusual just because, but just like listening to like the gender and the name of a character, because I see gay and straight improvisers like just forgetting like if the doctor was a woman or a man in the scene, and it just sort of is that like awkward, not intentionally microaggression, I guess, to like forget the gender of someone's character.
Right. And I think also like another thing that can be done is if you are sort of gifting someone with maybe a different gender than they are presenting as, it doesn't have to be like a big thing. Like if you make two men on stage be girlfriends, you know, or like, I think you can.
It's not permission to do your Mad TV audition from, you know, 1997.
or is it? Because sometimes when you're, like, gifted, like, you're labeled something that you're not presenting as, like, oh, is this... I mean, as a gay man, Brian and I were talking about this right before. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, I can just let loose and be, you know, a woman, because it's the only place you can be that in an improv scene.
Right. In film or TV, you would be at a flamboyant gay man, like, you would... You know, it's rare that you would play Tony. You wouldn't play a woman. You present. Right. You have a beard. Mm-hmm.
Right.
You present masculine.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it's twofold.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's on one hand, I want you to pay attention, but at the other hand, it's just like also the audience responds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's something that's kind of like ingrained in the culture and that we're getting better at, but we're still working.
Sure.
On. And so I think it's up to our allies to talk to us openly about, you know, who we are, what bothers us, and have that conversation and go to us.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think they don't know. Mm-hmm. Most of the time.
Right.
They don't know. And I feel, and also there's so much reinforcement, like, in society, and also just like in, like, if you see a scene with two guys and they're gonna kiss, people
are
freaking out.
Yeah, right.
Like, it's still crazy. I was like, what?
Right.
I was like, just kiss and just let's do an actual scene.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I think the thing that I struggle with, or what I see the most, and this is on improv stages all over the place, is people feeling the freedom to use language that could be considered slurs, essentially. That's mm-hmm. my biggest thing that I always get really worked up about, is seeing, like, cis straight improvisers, you know, calling someone a slur, a gay slur.
Drop the F-bomb, the
D-word. The D-bomb.
Really?
The C-word, I see. In New York, the C-word is come back in fashion.
Right.
Oh, my God.
And I think that it's...
You're right.
We don't do that in L.A.
Wow, you guys
we
are much more...
Well, there's too much industry in the audience.
Yes. Actually, yeah. We're aware. We're aware. And I guess that keeps some self-censoring.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah. I think that's something that I think we don't do in here. There's not much self-censoring at all. And when it does happen, it's like... often like, well, I'm going to drop this word for a laugh. And I think that audiences are getting a little bit smarter, and sometimes people don't get those laughs, so then they just said that word just to
say cheap, it. Yeah.
Is that happening on the UCB stages? Or in
for
the...
sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
It's, I think it's like a bigger...
Things it's happening at Cage Match. It's happening at...
yep.
At Cage Match. I'm listing the shows.
And I'll tell you another show that happened. That happened at Cage Match.
Right, it happened at Cage Match.
And... it's
now, look, I don't want every improv show to be recorded.
Right.
I love that there's signs all over DCM that say, like, let's party like it's 1999 and not take a picture and post some of the more boundary pushing things that people are doing on stage. Mm-hmm. We did, Lou and I did Wicked Fucking Queers last night.
On that.
Oh my God, Kelsey was there.
Kelsey was there.
For optics, they had two lesbians on the show.
We were so inclusive.
You know,
so
I wasn't
that you forgot about them completely.
I wasn't sober at that show.
Sure.
It was really fun to do that show, and, you know, it's like it was an all queer cast, kind of reclaiming a DCM tradition, which is Wicked Fucking Queer, where Ari Vukitis and a bunch of other Boston natives would put on a really bad improv show in character as these kind of ignorant people who say retarded and queer.
Mm-hmm.
And so this year we just turned it from queer to queers. Mm-hmm. And we did like a trash-tastic set at 3:30 in the morning.
I dumped an entire bottle of rosé on that audience and it felt
good.
It
that did.
It honestly was very cathartic. I was like, take it.
Yeah. I had so much rosé that I sprayed on people, and it was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the nastiest rosé. Yeah. I was also drinking it.
I don't think this audience knew the history of that word just being, like, funny for a bunch of, you know, white Irish dudes to use. Like,
yeah.
And now it's like that show would not have gotten into DCM this year.
Yeah.
So things are changing. Language is evolving, and there's certain words. Like, I think the B word... I think is on the cusp right now, where mm-hmm. people say like throw it around a lot, and I think it might be offensive, and I try not to use it, but I'm still like, if a character I have, it really feels like something they would say, it might slip out for me.
Right. Yeah, a lot of the times I feel like if someone is confronted about being like, hey, please don't, you use this word, I don't think that that was correct. A lot of the time I find like two arguments as to why they can use it. One is the scene called for it. The scene called for it.
The magical scene.
The magical scene called for me to call this guy the F word or whatever. Or it was, it was my character. Or it was like, oh well, I didn't really mean it. It was just sort of like, I'm an ally, and it's sort of like I have a lot of gay friends, so like I think that
it's
I
like
can
the
say
Bill,
it.
It's the Bill Maher perspective.
Yes.
Wow.
Where it's like I've dated a black woman, so I'm allowed to use the N word.
Right.
Like,
right. What? I once had someone tell me that they were allowed to say the F word because they worked at a gay bar, only to find out that gay bar they worked at is the meatball shop.
Meatballs are gay. But the meatball shop is not a gay bar.
Rob Chernow, exactly, the owner of the restaurant.
Listen, I cruise all the time at the meatball shop, but that's only because I love meatballs.
I'm cruising for those mashed potatoes, and they're good as hell.
That's right.
These are New York specifics I am not getting.
Okay. Yeah, the meatball shop is a restaurant where they solely sell meatballs.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Up to speed.
That's real gay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Super gay.
It's not Hamburger Mary's in West
oh,
Hollywood.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Okay. Okay. I got it. Drag queens are there. They're serving your food. And
oh, my God. If Meatball Shop had drag queens,
imagine?
I would, all the time I'd go.
Yeah. I think that, that idea of like a scene calling for a slur is kind of a cheap excuse. Because let's think about the scenes that you're trying to so ground your reality in. A scene from real life where someone is calling someone the F word is someone
maybe not
bullying
comedy?
Or attacking.
It's not a comedy scene.
Right. It's not a comedy scene. This is like a place that's like frightening. So why are we even doing a scene like that? I don't know. It's just
yeah, I think there are people that don't think of improv comedy as a relief and from the how sad and tragic the real world is.
Mm-hmm.
I personally feel it is.
Yeah.
And it's a nice break. And it's like we see horrible, dark, twisted stuff all the time. I'm not saying you can't do dark comedy, obviously.
Right.
But when people are like, wouldn't it be great if the scene got no laughs and it was just like really sad? I'm like, no. No, we have plenty of that, actually.
Yeah. Right.
And then if you're just using it for a cheap laugh, then you're not even doing good art.
Right.
So.
Before Wicked Fucking Queers, I had a show where I was basically just screaming at the audience for being racist, misogynistic, homophobic in their scenes. Like, people would come and tell me moments when they did improv in which they were that.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times they would.
This was the premise of the show?
This was the premise of the
show.
That's
very fun.
Ooh, baby.
And,
what was it called?
And it was called An Open Forum for Your Bullshit.
That's very
yes.
And so people would always be like, I didn't, that wasn't my intention. I was like, it's never anyone's intention to, you know, ultimately be hurtful when you're doing an improv scene. That's not what the problem is. It's that you're too ignorant to take responsibility for you being hurtful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's it. It's just like, just be cognizant and present. I think, you know what, sometimes a scene, if held responsibly, can have content that is crazy. I don't see anything particularly wrong in very specific small cases.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just that I don't think the mass majority of people are responsible enough for it mm-hmm. or are knowledgeable enough to have that like
well,
care.
Sort of the Dave Chappelle, you know, experience, which was at this point his show was 15 years ago. But he was like, he was paranoid that people were laughing for the wrong reasons.
Right.
And it's tricky when you're, you know, playing with identity on stage, when you're being satirical, kind of, mm-hmm. you know, making the bad side seem like it's winning for the sake of heightening, you
right.
know. I mean, I don't think, like, if there's a homophobic or a racist or a sexist character, that it's the job of the improvisers to, like, bring justice to that character and see them go to jail or something,
mm-hmm.
which I've heard people literally say. It's like, well, you should, in the improv scene, there needs to be comeuppance. It's like, the real world, people are bad and get away with
there
it.
Yeah.
The question is do you want to make that what your scene is about?
Sure.
Do you just say like, wow, my mom's racist, but let's talk about anything else? Or do you just tag away or edit or just like get out of that scene, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what
I
do.
Yeah. I think also it's just so crazy for me. We're literally doing improv where you can make anything happen. You are not like tied to a script. You are not, you can literally make up a word to call someone that's not something offensive. You could call someone like a, I don't know, a lollipop fucker. I don't know. Like literally you could do whatever.
If you want your character
to be. Please feel free to start using that.
That is the best.
Yeah.
That's a really good point. It's like, oh, like if the scene, for instance, is like a judgmental father meeting his daughter's boyfriend for the first time and he seems a little soft, right?
Right.
You really could call him a cupcake and that would be way funnier.
So, yeah.
To be like, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is the new boyfriend, huh? He looks like a cupcake to me.
Yeah.
And just let it be like just an ignorant, weird word.
Right.
Yeah, I just feel like sometimes some of that stuff is lazy. Like when they drop, because it's also it gets a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like going back to like using other words, like Patton Oswalt had a whole bit where he was just about like, how worse is it when they replace the curse words like in movies, and he's right. Mm-hmm. Like it sounds worse, but it's also funnier.
Yeah.
And it's like funny is kind of what we do, right?
Right. Isn't that the point? People are paying money to come laugh, not to be like confronted by the horrible things happening in the world. And we're tackling these social issues, and then we're gonna do a scene about a jizz baby mountain. Like what? It's come on.
Yeah.
Woof. Right?
But you know what? You gotta start somewhere. Like, I feel like, you know,
I'm not against Jizz Baby Mountain now that you mentioned
it. That's my bit show for next year. I'm working on what it actually is, so we'll figure it out.
The next time you're looking for a craft beer, play to the top of your intelligence and make it one of Bronx's Tasty Brews. There's something for every improviser archetype. For the glue, there's the Bronx Banner Ale. For the straight man, there's the Slow Your Roll Session IPA. And there's even the No Resolutions IPA for the wild card player. You know me. Visit thebronxbrewery.com to find a variety that matches your style. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx. Bronx Brewery is the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.
Does New York have any trans performers at the moment?
Yes.
Yeah.
And do you... should we include... is there any issue with how they're presenting on stage versus character? How they're labeled? Is there a...
I haven't seen any issues where, you know, a trans character hasn't been allowed to play opposite gender, you know?
Yeah, I think I know friends who are trans performers prefer to, just because of, I think, what they have gone through, like some of them prefer not to play the opposite gender of what...
Right, exactly.
They have transitioned to, or what they are. But so I think it's also sort of something honestly, what all of this comes down to is communication. If you want to be a better ally on stage, communicate with the people you're improvising with. I know it might be like a jam, so you don't know them, but I think just like knowing the person and knowing what they are and are not comfortable with, I think that just relieves you of like...
Right, and so that's putting... You know, we're sort of answering this question for the ally community. I also think that if you're a queer performer, like, infuse all your characters with a little bit of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And this came up on a podcast that was for straight cis white guys like a year ago that Will Hines reached out to me about and was like, we really didn't know how to answer this question. But, like, it was sort of the same... question we're having now, which one of the commenters was like, how come I don't see more gay characters on stage? And I think the initial answer is because people do play opposite gender a lot, and maybe it's almost easier to just be like, oh yeah, like mom and dad, Lou and I are mom and dad.
It's easier to accept someone, because yes and, if I'm talking a certain way and I'm labeled a woman, I'm always labeled like mom or something, I'm like, okay, cool, like this is just what I do. But I think... what was great is we did a show called Here and Queer earlier this week, and it was just great to just talk freely and just be labeled a man, like I'm a man. Mm-hmm. This is how I'm talking, this is how I am.
Yeah.
And I think it's just because of, just again, social norms. It's like, oh, you're talking a certain way, so you're feminine, so therefore you're a woman.
Right.
Because like that's what that
up
is.
Up until this point,
feminine is a woman.
There were so few LGBT yeah. people on stage that the improv instinct is like, oh, Lou is trying to be the female teacher in this scene, not just a teacher.
Yeah.
Right.
But I do think LGBT performers should just try to infuse themselves, like infuse their characters with as much of themselves as possible. Like, who says my waiter character's not gay just because we don't see his entire life story?
Yeah, and I feel like the thing that would be, I'm afraid that if you do like say like, oh, the waiter is gay, then him being gay becomes this weird thing that we follow, and then that becomes like the joke of this character, you know?
Instead of just a specific.
Right.
And then you're finding out something about in the scene.
Right.
Oh, that's interesting. It's like,
so people minimize the difference in order to not distract from the game.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
Yeah. That's a woker way to play.
Right.
That's mm-hmm.
right. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we are, as a people, very courteous and polite. And we...
Who's we as a people? Who
us.
Are you, who are you?
Us queers.
Us queers?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think we
that's,
often...
That's a statement.
I think we
well,
have been
for everyone.
Trained
for everyone.
To... kind of put other people's uncomfortable feelings before ours, you know, throughout life. And so I think it does carry over to improv.
I will say, lately, I've been especially snippy in scenes.
Yeah.
Where if I notice something, I'm just like, you know what, I don't want to deal with it right now. I've been doing this long enough that I'm just like, I'm going to stop you. No. This.
Yeah.
yeah.
And it's very freeing and it's very great. Mm-hmm. And like, we don't have to have a conversation afterwards. It's like, you learned your lesson, I embarrassed you publicly.
Yep.
yeah.
yeah.
Your shame is your lesson.
Mm-hmm.
And now we move forward from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have been snippy sometimes. Yes, we have those moments of, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, yeah, the shame is where you learn. I don't know how I feel about what you said about we as a people, and I'm wondering if I think that's a like a person of color thing versus white.
Mm. Wow, yeah.
Queer. I don't know. But like when you said like, oh, is that true? I don't know. I don't know if this will come across as a judgment, but I think white queer, generally speaking, might fall into that category of wanting to please or keep things less
hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
And I don't necessarily think that would be true for people of color.
Interesting.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Because I think, well, you can speak to this too.
Yeah.
I mean, I come from a Latin background, super tempestuous, fiery. I think, generally speaking, people of color that are queer, in America, that there's already this like otherness mm-hmm. with family, so that when someone's queer in that family, it sort of adds another layer. I think my family was not accepting, and over time they were, and I know lots of friends that's like, I don't know. I guess, I don't know.
Right. I guess to sort of double down on my terrible comment, but I do think it is a white aspect, but it's also, I think, a nature of the closet in general, which is like, you know, I'm not going to put this on this person for now. I'm going to like, it's like you're sort of, you get used to becoming extra empathic of other people's feelings because you are, you know, in the closet. And I think might go away once you're out.
I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that a lot. Because... I spent like my first like going through classes, even though I was out to my friends, I wasn't out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But I think it was because of my work. I wasn't out at my job. And so I was just like, I'm just gonna keep it clean and just be like, if I'm not out here, I'm not out there. And then at some point I was like, this is stupid. This is stupid, this is too much work. Mm-hmm. and then you're just like, no, this is who I am. But I think you're right. I think because I also am an other, I have like two weights. It's kind of like weights on you a little. And then you're just like, I don't like once you're like kind of like free, in a sense, especially in an improv scene, I feel safe. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. like that's my freedom.
Yeah.
And anytime, like, people try to push stuff back, like sometimes the claws come out.
Yeah. No, I think that's 100% fair. I think sometimes if I see something happening on stage, I'm actually like Lou had said, like I will shame them and then move on. I think just like the reason that I get so fired up, in taking UCB classes, I sort of like, I was closeted when I started my 101 through 301. And then as I sort of like found my voice on stage, I sort of found the confidence to sort of living, coming out to more friends and family. And I think that doing improv really helped me find myself, and like improv became like a place where I was very confident. So when I see people doing scenes that use, that like are homophobic or transphobic or anything like that, I just think about the students watching it who might also be questioning coming out, and like how horrible that must feel. Because UCB did so much in helping me find my voice and my identity. Like to see people sort of shitting on that, I'm just like, I'll come for you on in a Facebook comment.
And you also have to deal with misogyny.
Right.
Like that's just something, you know. I deal with a fraction of that because I'm gay. Mm-hmm. Like they treat me shitty because they compare me to a woman.
Yeah, the feminine.
I can only imagine you like, and then the well is much deeper because you are a woman.
That's a completely different podcast topic. But I can't tell you how many times I've been standing on a back line and a man has pointed at me to come out just so that he can have a woman play his wife in the scene. And it's just like, oh, fuck you. And I got to this point where I just have gotten, I don't give a fuck about anyone anymore. Like I am a beast on stage because I don't care. I'm not going to be just some girl on that stage for you to be able to be your wife. I'm an improviser and I will be funnier than you. And I am a gay improviser and I will be funnier than you. Fucking straight ass.
Oh, I love that.
People suck.
I think, you know, and it's also, I don't want to absolve people of their ignorance, but I will say we're all learning products of our environments, since our environments aren't necessarily, you know, everyone's figuring it out. The older you get, the more you realize people don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Most of the time, they're just figuring it out.
Yeah.
And so, like, I see, like, my parents, like, my family in general, like, they're great in terms of me being gay, but still, they have so much to learn.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a product of them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a product of their ignorance. The reason why I was in the closet, because of their ignorance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because of society's ignorance.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I couldn't accept myself because the world didn't understand what I am. I had to figure out what I was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's also why the claws come out, because the journey was hard to get to me.
Mm-hmm.
And once I'm me, and then you're denigrating me, it's just like, shut the fuck up. I'm not here for it.
Right. Have you guys had any moments like in your own scenes where maybe a scene partner has done something and then like had to apologize to you afterwards? Like, has there ever been like a, like where they knew that they did something wrong?
I've never experienced this on stage. I've seen it happen on stage.
Yeah.
And I think, I was thinking while we were talking earlier about like the process of discovering yourself when you were at the UCB or in a theater. I wonder, how old were you when you started at UCB?
This was 5 years ago. I was around 25.
25?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I find it very interesting about, there's some people that find themselves at UCB and that's where they're coming out gradually, and that's the community that they're working those things in. It's a man's club, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a boys' club,
mm-hmm.
predominantly white, straight. I think some older gay people that come into the UCB, at least for me, performer-wise, sort of had that experience in the theater. And so the UCB was another theater, so they'd already come through their coming out process before they got there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for younger people, is this fair to ask if the UCB is the first workings of theater and performance and self-expression, it's so much more difficult because, I mean, stereotypically, theater is gay.
Right.
But then the comedy world is not
right.
at all. So you're navigating this minefield mm-hmm. of finding out yourself.
And I think it is right. a minefield is a good metaphor, because maybe for the first time you're playing more of a version of yourself, and UCB stresses that. That was a struggle for me. I was very comfortable in my college improv group, playing like ridiculous characters, doing theater, being given a role, and UCB, when I got there, they were like, all right, day one, truth in comedy. You're going to be playing a version of yourself if you were a doctor in this scene.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We don't need to do funny voice parade just to get laughs. Like, the goal is to be a version of yourself. They have that, like, speech in 101 that's like, there are three types of characters, right? There's you, if you had this job or were in this situation, right? Then there's you if you were a little older or holding a baby or whatever that might, like, actually make you a slightly different person. And then the third, most rare, that you should see, or at least this was 10 years ago when I first started, was the character that is the unusual thing in the scene. I think the pendulum has swung,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it's because there are more, you know, interesting performers on stage.
Yeah.
That, like, the moments happen where you've got four people playing a version of the straight man doing a mapping game with no interesting... acting happening,
mm-hmm.
and then you get people like the four of us that are like, I know how to make this scene better, and we do, and then it sort of shames the status quo a little, and mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, that's good. Well, so just to wrap up really quickly, let's just go down the line, and if you guys could have one tip to give to allies to be even better allies on stage, let's share them, so that this will be like the cliff notes. People can just scrub to the end of this podcast, so this is the meat and potatoes that they can walk away with. I'll do mine first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the biggest tip for being an ally on stage, aside from being considerate in your language, is just try and expand and talk to more people who are different than you. Brian was actually my teacher for a class that was predominantly all gay people. We did have some straight people in it.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards they would just tell me, they're like, just being in this class, I learned so much, and just about like the community, that I feel like I'm just walking away different with different perspectives. And I think that's just what you need.
That's great. Seek out opportunities where you might be the only one in
yes.
the room.
Yeah. Don't be afraid to be the minority, because normally you are not the minority on stage.
Yeah. I guess my one tip for allies in how to play with us, I know it's such a challenge, I think just turn up your listening ears, like your improv ears, more, and just be looking for those cues that your scene partner is saying, that says what my character is, like what my name is,
mm-hmm.
like, is this part of the scene or is this the game? Like,
mm-hmm.
it's the classic, like, improv notes, but I think don't get lazy with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say embrace your ignorance. Embrace it. You know, it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to mm-hmm. ask a question that is stupid after a show. It's okay to make these mistakes as long as we can talk about them
mm-hmm.
afterwards, and be open to that aspect of yourself, and that you're learning and that you're growing, and reach out definitely with really ignorant shit if you want to learn and know
right.
more.
Right.
I think that's the best.
Yeah. Tony, take us home.
All right. I'd say just be cool.
Be cool. Hey, just
don't
be cool, man.
Dick.
Don't be
yeah,
all uncool.
Don't be a dick.
Don't be a dick.
It's a classic. Don't be a dick.
You guys all want to go head over to Jizz Mountain?
Yeah, let's go to Jizz Mountain.
Oh. Jizz Mountain.
This has been the UCB Longform Conversation Podcast. We got Lou. We got Brian. I'm Kelsey. We got Tony reminding you all, don't be a dick on stage. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.
Thanks to the Bronx Brewery. the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network, for their support. Visit thebronxbrewery.com for more information on all their craft beers. And be sure to make your next pint a Bronx.